right. I'm going to keep us on pace here on time. I'm Rob Dixon. I have the honor of introducing Jeff Batts. So Jeff is a friend, and he's a partner to our business. And he owns and operates Principal HR Solutions here in Nashville. And so Principal does tailored solutions for executive and senior level HR consulting, and also a full-scale fractional HR consulting firm, so they can handle the entire HR area of your business. And so Jeff has been integral to our success. Is that the word in the HR world? Integral to our journey, especially over the past few years. What's that? Yes, fantastic. So the bar is very low. So I'm just kidding. We're not going to jail yet. So the so Jeff, the way that he works with us is primarily in a consulting fashion, and it's been amazing. I over the past 17 years in small business ownership, I've stepped on plenty of landmines. I have fallen into many pits, and I've gained a lot of experience. But he's helped me to take that and use those experiences, that experiential knowledge, to navigate the next part of our journey. And he comes alongside and helps to consult to make sure that we build the culture that we want to build, that we optimize the performance of our team, and that we can, you know, make this thing profitable so that there's more fuel to put into the engine. And so Jeff has been instrumental in that, and I'm excited to be able to introduce him to you all here today. He's going to be helping us to understand navigating and cultivating emotional health. So Jeff Batts, everybody.
So the microphone for me is going to be a little weird. It's just talking because I'm stuck. I like to move around the room a little bit. But I appreciate you guys coming in today. I appreciate you being willing to join us for this discussion. And I want it to be a discussion, okay? Because this is not a place where you're going, okay, we're talking about navigating and cultivating emotional health, and the HR guy's going to do that, right? Doesn't make a lot of sense. But I can hopefully get you there, why that's going to work and what we're going to be doing. But it is, if you will promise me that you will just participate, that will make this go a whole lot better. So does everybody remember the first time they had to get up to speak? I mean, everybody, I mean, it's just okay. This isn't my first, this is the second. But the first time I had to do it was when I was 17 years old, about to turn 18. Our youth minister at our church said all the senior boys needed to get up and give a lesson one Sunday. And I was like, that's a terrible idea. It's horrible. And he said, we'll do this very fairly. We're going to go in alphabetical order. Last name's Batts. And so I was leading the team off, and they're all in the crowd. They're waiting for this to bomb, and I'm waiting for it to bomb. And I finally went to him before that. I went to him and said, you know, Tommy, what should I talk about? What in the world can I talk about? He said, lead off with something that you relate to, something that's important in your life. Well, I'm a big, and please hold the laughter, I'm a big Vanderbilt fan, okay? And so, please hold the laughter. And so, you know, so, well, you know, we all have something in common. We're going to be, we definitely are going to heaven because we've been through a lot. and we've traveled a weary road. But that's what the only two lessons I could come up with were long suffering and great trials and tribulations, you know? And so, I remember that to this day, and every time I get up in front of people to talk, I think about that moment when Tommy put us in that situation. Navigating and cultivating emotional health is the topic. What I want to do is I want to make sure that we all understand and kind of have a baseline of where we are. So today we're going to talk about where we are as a business world, as a world, kind of where we're going, and what can we do to react to what is becoming, in my opinion, and a lot of professional opinions, one of the biggest, if not the biggest, crisis facing business today. Now, somebody might stop immediately there and raise hands and say, well, you haven't seen turnover numbers, have you? Well, I think this impacts the turnover numbers. I think this is part of that. And so I want to talk about this from a holistic perspective. I'm going to give you a lot of data up front to support it so that you understand kind of where we are. And then we're going to kind of transition to what can we do? And I want us all to leave with some practical ways of dealing with this going forward. So with that being said, emotional health has been something that Scripture's dealt with. I mean, we've been dealing with emotional health issues since the beginning of time, right? David, I mean, was, you know, he cried out to the Lord in pain and his heart broken. Be merciful to me, Lord, for I am in distress. My eyes grow weak with sorrow, my soul and body with grief. Okay, I'm going to come back to and body in just a little bit. The Lord is near to the brokenhearted and saves the crushed spirit. We as Christian business leaders have an obligation to serve the mind and heart and spirit and bodies of our employees. I think we have that obligation. And I don't know that I've always thought that. I grew up in a corporate world, okay? So I've had my business for 4 years, four long years, right? You know, but before that, I worked in corporations, and I worked at my last 18 years, I was a senior vice president and director of HR for Regions Bank. Okay. So if you banked at Regions, yeah, I was there. If not, I understand. why this is so important to me and what I want to make sure that we talk about today is I want to give you a quick story. So 5 years ago, I was diagnosed with clinical depression, severe clinical depression. Okay. And I was not a happy camper about being diagnosed with it. I first of all thought it was a sign of weakness, and felt like that if we could just go get me a pill or something, we could fix this. As a matter of fact, the first time I went in and met with the clinician, I said very skeptically, I said, "Well, I know this is my mom or dad's fault, so can we just get to it and get it over?" Okay. And he laughed and he said, "Well, so is it your mom and dad's fault?" And I thought, "Oh my goodness, we've just opened a can of worms." Yeah, this is not how this is supposed to go. So, but for me, it was admitting weakness is what I thought I was admitting. What I was trying to express to him, though, and I did express to him, was I was having physical signs that were causing me not to be able to perform daily life functions. I hurt. I physically hurt. My chest hurt. I had rapid heartbeats. I had all the signs of someone that was going through depression. And he broke down for me. I kept saying this, I got to overcome this. I've got to fix this. And he goes, you're going to miss the point here. You're not going to fix this. This is a health issue. And I started rewinding, going back through everybody that I had worked with for 18 years as an HR person. When they came in, there were two issues. There was an emotional issue and there's health issues, right? And what the clinician was trying to tell me was they're all the same. It's all equal. And that actually, we're going to talk about here in just a minute, how the health issues are driven in a lot of ways by what's going on emotionally, right? So let's go on to, if I can actually flip my pages here so I can see my notes. So my story goes on to be that I did get treatment. But however, my treatment, and I think this is important because I'm not telling you this for you to relate to me or feel sorry. I want you to understand, I've seen this from both sides is what the point of this is. But my treatment ended up requiring me to take time off from work. Okay. That was a big deal for me because what that ended up doing was it changed my relationship with the people at work because like me before as the HR director, they didn't really understand. It wasn't their fault. They just didn't understand. They were thinking about it the same separated way. You have an emotional issue that you need to deal with. All right. You need to deal with it. It's the phrase that we always hear. Or you have a health issue, right? And so for me to take that time off was very difficult for all of us because I felt like I was showing weakness and they felt like I wasn't dealing with things as well as I should have. Okay. Dr. Greeden is a MD that is not a psychiatrist. And John Greeden said, we need so much more openness and transparency and understanding that it's okay to talk about depression as an illness. It's not a weakness. It's not a moral shortcoming, which, again, a lot of our folks, especially in the faith, feel like they're not being complete Christians. They're not being everything God wants them to be. They're failing God in a lot of ways. It's something that it's not something that people brought on themselves. That's a big piece of it, because everybody that I've dealt with over the last 4 years in my job talked about how this built up on me, this built on me, and I couldn't handle it. So they're looking at it as, again, an emotional something that they just couldn't manage. And what I want you to hear today is there's a health issue, a health crisis going on in America. So where are we now? This is a study by Gallup. Are y'all familiar with what Gallup does in the business place right now? Gallup is, you remember the Gallup does surveys, right? That's what they're known for. They're also the number one science-based employer coach in, I'm messing up the way to say that, but the employer coach in the country. What they do is they focus science. They take surveys of employees and they focus that science on how to improve the work culture in companies. They're fantastic. They actually have something called the Q12, and you can go out there and look it up. And it's 12 questions that you can ask employees. It's a survey that they give you. They take it, they take the data, bring it back to you, and tell you how you stack up against other companies your size in the business world. I think it's fantastic. And what the Q12 ends up saying is, something about, they ask a question. The most controversial question to ask is, do you have a friend at work? Okay. Boy, you want to talk about trying to explain that to employees. No, my friends are not at work. Or I don't define my friends at work. It's like, just do you have a friend? It's that simple. But there's thousands and thousands of data points behind each question that they ask. There's tons of science there. Okay. So what John Clifton is the CEO of Gallup, and he wrote a book called Blind Spot, which I have a copy of here today. It's called The Global Rise of Unhappiness and How Leaders Missed It. Okay. So I don't know if you've been thinking about this at all or why you may have come into this meeting today, but a lot of people feel like unhappiness at work really, really started during the pandemic. I felt that way. Okay. Or unhappiness in general in the population really kind of came to its crescendo during the pandemic. You may feel that way or think about that or had that kind of manifest itself at work. The study by Gallup says something a little bit different. It says that since 2015, 2014, we've been on a kind of a sharp trajectory in the world. This is a world survey. This is over 1 million participants in this survey. Okay. That we've been on the unhappy train. All right. People are getting more and more unhappy. I know we don't see that in society today, and I know we don't see that in our political world, but they are getting more and more unhappy, okay? Thank goodness we don't cover that kind of stuff. So,
Is this a Gallup survey? Where is this negative experience
from? It comes from his book. Yeah, so it's in the book Blind Spot. And what Clifton was trying to say in all this was, we have a baseline that we've been getting more and more unhappy as a population of people, a world population of people, for almost 10 years. I mean, we're getting close to the 10-year mark. But it really does. You can see the spike. You can definitely see a spike as we get closer to 2021, right? I mean, you can just see it. The numbers are going up and up. People are bringing all of that to work. And the five factors that went into the survey were anger, stress, sadness, physical pain, and worry. Again, I want you to see that physical connection there. In your workplaces, I want to stop and ask, in your workplaces, are you seeing more people experiencing health issues than you did in the past? Some people say no, by the way. It's okay to say no, but you're seeing the health issues that are starting to increase. Are you seeing more discontent with work? I'm just not happy here. Why? It's not the same as it used to be. I have to work harder than I used to have to work. Even if they're performing the same job, I have to work harder. Some people are actually about having to work harder, but there's a lot of emotion built into our workplaces today. And this is the thing that I want to make sure that we connect on. And that is, when you bring an employee into work, you hire everything about them. It's kind of like a marriage. You don't marry the person, you marry the family, you marry their history, you marry what's going on in their daily lives. And that's what happens when you bring an employee in to work for you. You bring in everything. You know, I used to have a boss had a horrible plaque on her desk. She was a director of HR, and the plaque said, "I'd love my job if it weren't for the people."
Oh my goodness.
Isn't that horrible? Why did I share that? Because, you know, yeah, she told me one day, she said, "I'm overwhelmed by what I have to manage through just to get production out of people." And I don't see it that way. I see it as an opportunity for us to both serve and minister to people to get the best out of them. That's what we have the opportunity to do. Now, sometimes it's not going to work, and sometimes they can't stay with your companies. And I understand that. We've talked about things like that in a lot of my HR clients. But, you know, knowing that you're up against this wall of, you know, unhappiness that's starting to creep into our workplaces is important. Now, it's probably a more daunting picture than the situation, but it looked better on a computer screen. You know, a workplace tsunami is going on. It's not one thing. It's not just they're unhappy. I want to make sure that we stress that. We have a political and social divide. It doesn't matter where you are on the political spectrum. It doesn't matter where you are from social perspective. We have every piece of social media out there tells you should be angry at somebody. Okay. As a matter of fact, before I came in, I was flipping through trying to find how bad Vanderbilt got beat in baseball yesterday on Twitter. And it was brutal what was being said just in a 3-minute scan of trying to find a baseball score. That's what ESPN's for. Generational pressures. This is something that I don't know that we're thinking a lot about right now, but maybe you are, is Generation X, my generation, the grumpiest generation in history, right, is now having to take care, is becoming caregivers. We're becoming caregivers for our parents. We're becoming caregivers in a lot of times for extended caregivers for our children, right? Things that we didn't plan for, we have a stressor on us in a way that we haven't in history, okay? We knew this was coming. We knew this was coming, but we're having to deal with it now. We have pandemic aftermath. We're going to talk a lot about that here in just a minute because I think it has impacted the workplace in a big way. And then there's financial uncertainty. There's always financial uncertainty. I mean, we heard that downstairs right before we came up, right? But there's a financial uncertainty coming out of the pandemic. For those of us that remember, you know, the Great Recession, things of that nature, that doesn't seem that long ago, but it was. But it's still impacting that we've gone through something where prices now are out skyrocketing. I was going to bring eggs in today, couldn't get a loan. You know, we have a lot of financial uncertainty, and our younger folks are feeling that too. They don't know how to deal with some of this financial uncertainty.
They can't buy homes. Our children's generation, I don't know how they're going to buy their first home.
It's funny you bring that up because I have a 27-year-old and two 24-year-olds, yeah. And they're wanting to be home towards Ma and Dad.
Yeah.
Why? I don't know, because I know Ma and Dad, but they are. And there's no way for them to live in Nashville. There's no starter home here.
No. My daughter turns 24 next week, and she's right. She's like, I don't know what I'm ever going to afford to. And at the price of renting, they can't ever even save. I mean, it's tragic.
And so the stress from that, and I want to make sure that we understand the stress from that is on our employees. Mm-hmm. They're all, you know, when you go to recruit someone right now and you recruit somebody from out of market, they understand that there's going to have to be some sort of compensation for living expenses, not buying expenses, but living expenses. Again, not a single issue, but compounded with these others, it becomes a huge issue. So going to the pandemic, I mean, let's just talk about the factors that played into what we went through. We had lockdowns. First time in most of our history that somebody told us to stay home for 2 weeks, right? It's going to be okay, right? And then we had this fear of what's going to be okay. How's that going to be? What does that mean? We had health concerns. You know, I didn't go to church I was virtual church for a year, it seems like, maybe. We introduced globally working from home. We all suffer from that today in some way. Positive, there may be some positives to it. There's a lot of positives to it, but we suffer from working from home. Office rules. We went back to work and there was masks, there was distancing. We learned how to elbow each other instead of shake hands. I think I can remember literally all these things meeting with Rob one day. I came over to meet with him where we were meeting, required a mask. We both had a mask on. We washed up. Then we shook out. We bumped elbows. And I mean, I was like, what kind of world are we in right now? This is surreal. But we carried this on with us. The quarantine, financial uncertainty, families, friends were sick, the general uncertainty. And so people have carried all this into the workplace with them.
So I spent 2.5 years leading a global COVID response company. And I think one of the biggest impacts that's not on your list, implied a little bit, is that people stopped trusting their coworkers, their colleagues, because it was so tribal. People who you used to think was your work buddy, now you think that they're on the wrong team, and now I'm not going to trust them, and relationships get severed, they don't come back. I mean, it just amplifies all of that.
I think that's huge. I think we saw, it goes to the social piece that I was talking about before. We've become very tribal. I think tribal is a really good word for this, in that there's a bunch of us and them teams within our workplace. There's a beautiful video about this that breaks groups up into 6 or 7 groups. It's a church sponsored video. It breaks them up into 6 or 7 groups, asks them to go to a specific group. And then it says, okay, now, and the groups are 8 by age, and then they're by race. And all of a sudden the groups mix up and they switch up. And then it's by, if you ever had cancer, if you're a cancer survivor, and all of a sudden the groom mixes up. If you ever had somebody in your family that has cancer, have you ever had this or that? And they go through 7 or 8 things. And all of a sudden you realize there shouldn't be a divide. But we as a world right now have done a really good job of dividing and conquering. And so again, all of this is coming into your workplace. So that's the end. If anybody has any questions, the thing that I want to make sure that you hear is there's hope. Okay. So we've talked about those things. We've talked about, we've got a younger workforce right now that I think is come back to work. And I don't know, Are most of you working remotely? How many of you work 100% remote? Okay. How many of you work 50% or more in remote? Okay. Everybody else back in the office, right? Okay. You see the mix. You see it's taking all this to get work done right now. Okay. And we found some good things about working remotely. There's some real positives about it for some workforces and for specific jobs. But for some, it's not a good thing. And so we've asked them to come back in the office. And when we have people coming back in the office that go, I really need that remote work. I really need that time away from the office to do my job. I mean, that's its own seminar. But it was driven by all of this. And so when they come back in the office, they bring stressors back in. So I talked to Craig Clark recently. Craig is in Nashville, I'm going to say, one of the leading psychiatrists in all the country. And that's because he's so well-published. He's so respected by his peers. If you ever get a chance to interact with him, he's a man of faith. And I just said, I'm doing this workshop. I need some help. And he said, boy, you bit off more than you could chew. And I said, no, I don't think so. I think you can help me out. And so he said, we were talking about this, and he said, I firmly believe employers should be placing mental and emotional health where it belongs, namely at the top of their list of employee priorities. He says it's the number one priority from his perspective that employers should be dealing with. Now he's a little biased, but a few years ago, depression passed all other causes as the number one reason for disability worldwide. I'll read the rest here in a second, but I talked to former head of the regional head of Cigna here in Nashville, and they have a task force right now that's been formed on how they're going to start providing a more effective emotional health support system through their insurance. They have to. He said that the public is clamoring for it. He said, Craig went on to say, I read several studies months ago about sponsored by Alphabet Google, and they found the most important factors in corporate environments were a sense of emotional safety on the part of employees, i.e. the ability to openly speak their minds and to seek help for their emotional needs without fear of retribution. Go back to my story. They didn't know what to do with me when I got back. Is he going to be okay? Is he emotionally stable enough for the job, right? Those are relevant questions. But I think what we find is that people are dealing with this now as a health issue. And we, as Christian employers, we need to deal with this as a health issue. So a little more statistical information. Employers are starting to recognize that the mental health is a worsening crisis. Most employers, this is from Lyra Health. Most employers are now prioritizing employee mental health. Employers can break down barriers to care. What they basically said was that 31% of the workforce right now says year over year from 21 to 22 said that their mental health had declined in that period of time. 31%, one in three of your workforce. 59% of the people they surveyed said that that their mental health is impacting them right now. More than half. Go back to what Dr. Clark said. Dr. Clark's saying this is something we're dealing with. As people of faith, we're more equipped to deal with this and help people through this than anybody else. So the employee reactions, are you seeing these? Attendance and punctuality, productivity, engagement with their team, with the team. Have you seen this one? Blaming employer or manager, coworkers for their unhappiness. The big one I'm seeing is I'm overworked. I'm just overworked. It's so nonspecific. It's just that I've got too much on me. The other big one we're seeing is retention. People are just quitting, going where the grass is greener, right? And they're chasing money. We all know money is not the number one reason why people leave. People will start leaving people, and they'll leave environments that they believe and perceive to be dangerous to them. Because just like Maslow's hierarchy of needs says, safety and security is the number one thing people are looking for. What other things impact on coworkers? What else are you seeing in the workplace? Are you seeing any of these things happen? What other things are you seeing?
I think some of the things that you have listed there has driven some decisions by the business to change what they offer. Because the company I'm with, I have been with for 22 years, but I get the same time off as somebody that's been there for six.
Yeah.
And that's not the way it was when I signed on.
Right.
So because people are deciding to find that greener grass, mm-hmm. the companies have responded like, well, people are kind of going through the revolving door, so why should we give another week if you're there 15 years, you know?
Yeah.
And that's pretty insulting to somebody that's been committed for that length of time.
Right.
But you can understand from the business side.
They're having to react to something to stop the bleeding, right? Mm-hmm. And we're throwing a lot of different benefits at people. I'm going to suggest a new benefit. Okay. I think employers have an opportunity. We have an opportunity to understand that the global issue is manifesting itself in the workplace. We have the opportunity to give employees a safe place to share emotional health issues. Now, I would tell you that you've got to be careful in how you do all this, because there are laws out there. Here's the HR guy. I mean, you know, you got to be careful about HIPAA, you know, making sure you understand protecting health information. But I think these are things that are very important. Be alert on changes in productivity and behavior for your traditionally above average employees. You'll see it. It shows up in the people that are top flight and top performers. All of a sudden, something happens. Their level of discontent pops in. Evaluate health plan coverage for mental illness and health benefits. Have you noticed, if you look at your health plans, typically they haven't been as strong around mental and emotional health. They offer some sort of EAP program where you can call and get 3 or 4 visits with a clinician on the phone or by Zoom, something of that nature. But a lot of the healthcare providers in our area are not engaged with the healthcare companies. They won't take the insurance, right? But that's okay. I think there's some ways around it. I think there's some things you can do. Consider employee assistance programs and consider them in multiple forms. First of all, there's formal programs out there. You can go out and employ an employee assistance company that will work directly with your employees. They have licensed social workers working with your employees, clinical social workers. You can do that. You can partner with firms that provide these services that are not EAPs, good counseling firms. You can engage them. And that's something that I really think you ought to look at. I'll give you a case study. One client had multiple people turning over, had this situation, same sort of things that we're all talking about. And what we did was we went to the employees and said, we know there's burnout going on. We know there's things going on in your workplace, in your daily life that are more than we can fathom. We want to give you some help. And their employer of 40 employees, okay? They offered up this. We're going to offer up counseling. And we're going to give you some counselor names. You don't have to use them. You can use whoever you want, but we're going to give you some resources so that the employee didn't feel lost. And the second thing we're going to do is we're going to pay $100 for every visit that you go to. If you turn it in as a receipt, we're going to pay $100. Now you're thinking, oh my goodness, what the expense, right? We're taking on more expense. Nothing. They ended up paying $1,000 a month for the first 6 months. Their retention, I know this sounds, I'm not tying it all to this, but the retention rate went up. Their engagement rates have gone up, and people are now off and on using this program. And all they have to do is call me, and I act as their HR partner. They call me. I'm a third party. They know no one's going to see their information. All they have to do is turn their receipts to me. I turn it into their accounts, to their payroll, and they get reimbursed $100. What did the company end up saying to them? We hear you, we care, and we've got a solution.
So more than that, they said you matter.
Yeah, and it cost them $100 a month per employee. I don't like spending other people's money. One of the things I try not to do for my clients is spend their money unless it's Rob. But, you know, if it's Rob, it's his money. I don't care. But one of the things, I think this is such an investment in employees to do this kind of program. And setting it up is a little bit tricky again, because you got to make sure that the privacy rights are protected of the employee, but it is money that is not, it's an investment. It's an investment in your people, and it tells them that they matter. It's a retention tool. If you want a business reason, it's a retention tool.
So I do say consider a homegrown EAP program. Communicate your understanding of health issues to the employees. This should be in meetings. This should be discussions that you have, that you understand what's going on in the marketplace, that you understand what's going on at home, that you don't understand the details, but you know because you relate to it. I can get up in front of employees and tell them, I understand. Been there. Here's a good way to help. And then create work environments that are positive, engaged, safe places for employees to be. This is not a what some people might call safe, you know, I need a safe space. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a safe place for them to be where they can come to a manager and share their issues. All right. So I'm closing in on the end. What are your thoughts? What are your thoughts about things that you can do or that I haven't thought about in providing for you today that others could benefit from?
Have you talked to your partners about chaplaincy, either internal or external?
So I have two partners that do that, and we use faith-based organizations to support them in everything they do. A lot of our business partners are not faith-based organizations, and so they're resistant to it. If they're resistant to it, I still provide them the client, the companies that I use for this EAP build out are faith-based groups because I trust them. I will talk to them. I know where their hearts are. I know what they're trying to do is get people back healthy again. And they're doing it through a spiritual model.
Yeah, it's physical, emotional, and spiritual.
Yep.
Even if you're not faith-based, having spiritual health being taken care of, the benefits is just good practice.
The ones you want to stay away from working with, I would stay away from any kind of group specifically that the person's not going to be able to see the same person all the time. They're not going to be able to get the kind of, you have to do some due diligence with these firms. But there are some really, really good faith-based counseling groups here in Nashville.
There's two that are national, Marketplace Chaplains and Corporate Chaplains of America. They're both empathetic also.
Okay.
They're both good chaplaincy organizations.
I think you find the fit for your company and you make it work. But I think you do it. I am afraid that this is going to continue on for the next couple of years. This is where that we're coming off the peak is what I'm praying, but I think we're going to be at the peak for the next couple of years. And I think we've got to be sure and make sure that what we're doing is, I forget about the microphone. Make sure what we're doing is providing people a way forward. I think this is going to become regular though. I think this is going to become a regular offering for companies. And I think it doesn't matter if you're a large employer or a small employer, you can make this offering at different levels, but you can still make this type of offering.
How long have they been doing the negative experience index? Is that starting in 2005?
Yeah, that's when he started it.
I'd love to see an index that's over 100 years old. I mean, during World War II, people can't have been. Talk about that emotionally upset.
Yeah, Gallup's been doing it since 2005. And they're just now getting the trending data for him to put out the book. He feels like it took that long for it. When you read it, he talks about it took that long for us to be sure what we're talking about. Yes, ma'am.
So I lead a team of all remote people, around, I think, 20, two males, the rest are all females. Mm-hmm. And I've had four go through divorce in the last 2 years. So now I have single moms. Mm-hmm. And I had some single moms even before that, but four divorces in 2 years. So one, as a leader, like, how in the world? I mean, I talk to my husband about it all the time. It's just a huge burden as the leader, you know, to go, man, whew. I just had another one, you know, this week call and say, I need to talk this through. And you're just not prepared, you know what I mean? It's just a heavy burden to carry. So there's that. When you kind of get brought in as a leader or have the opportunity and privilege to lead a team, you just never know what's going to come in. So one, just like personally for me, I'm just favored, like, I am so ill-equipped to manage the emotional health and needs of my staff while also that's tough. I'm just putting that out there well, to say, I think this, and then secondarily, it is kind of from the employer's perspective, I just hearing regularly from single moms out there that are trying to navigate life. And again, they're all remote, so that helps to a degree. Mm-hmm. But our company has pretty strict policies around, you know, this remote cannot be a replacement for daycare. But you can't police that, you know what I mean? And I have four additional women who are having just had children or about to have some more children, you know, so they've got newborns and all. I mean, it's just like so the remote thing.
They never get to leave the workplace.
Yeah, exactly. It's just one thing.
Right.
To the next.
Yeah, yep.
It's just an incredible, the remote reality, once we were forced into it with COVID, we weren't before that. It's just a whole new landscape that is really, really difficult to navigate.
You said something though. You said, I'm not equipped to manage their mental health or their situation, right? You're not equipped. You are equipped to provide them resources. You're very equipped. And you can provide them counsel from a business perspective. That's what we offer. That's the difference in Christian folks in work and a secular worldview of things. You know, I came out of the secular world of business, and I know there was no offering of counsel or help. But I know I also ran into one person at our company who understood me as a person of faith and said, I don't know what's going on with you, but we can pray about it. We can spend time in prayer. You know, it's okay. But you also now know that there are resources out there too, that you can provide them. And when I talk about emotional and mental health, I'm talking about everything that's impacting them, worry, fear, pain, all those kind of things that are impacting them. If they're going through a divorce, they can see counseling and get help through that. Christian counseling, pastoral counseling. They can seek these groups that I work with. They can work with them. If they're going through something personally emotional or their kids are going through it, one of my clients is paying the same amount for family members to go through this counseling. Okay. Again, we haven't seen a huge spike in cost, but what we have seen is people talking about it and saying, yeah, I had my kid do that. The company paid $100 per visit. They went to 7 visits, $700. And the company, Jim, the owner, cares about me. Now it's a safe place to be. Now we've created a culture. There's a lot of things that are happening just because of what's going on for this crisis. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
One of the slides had culture at the bottom of it, and I can't help, I'm thinking about this in terms of our company, and culture is a big thing. Culture gets a lot of attention, and one of the cultural aspects that we are trying to weave in to our management team is one where we apologize when we're wrong, because apologizing communicates a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Apologizing is humbling. Apologizing is admitting fault. Mm-hmm. Apologizing has a leveling effect among roles within a company.
Right.
And it takes humility. It takes openness. It takes just some sort of equal. It's got an equalizing effect. And I think it's taking us time to get leaders who buy into that. It takes a culture that has that as something that can happen. But what we've got to think about is, and we're seeing it start to now filter down through the company,
mm-hmm.
middle level managers and that sort of thing. And even as recently as this week, we had one lady she realized she needed to go speak to 3 different people separately to apologize about a situation that started at the work earlier. And it's amazing the healing effect of that.
Yeah.
The openness of that. And all these little divides and silos and all the stuff that happens. And so it's just, just kept thinking about that as you're talking about some of this, and it's a culture thing for us that we're trying to feed and infuse. But I think that means we're setting ourselves up to have some of these other conversations
when you're human, when you're Christ-like, when you're being the person you're supposed to be.
I think that tone at the top is important. It reminds me of a story. This was to them from leaders who were not believers. So we had a problem through COVID, probably most people did, where people didn't take their 15 days of time off or 20 days. Everybody just did nothing. And of course, that just produces more burnout. So our executive team intentionally started taking time off, staycation time off, and came back and started talking about it. And what do we see? Oh, yeah, that bank of PTO time company-wide started to get lower as the year set in town. And then I had, obviously, getting the global COVID response is not exactly a phone-in kind of job. And I got to tell you, at the end of 21, I was just gone. And I had already planned to take the week after Thanksgiving off. So now the guy who has an important job for the season was going to be gone for 10 days, and I told my boss, I think I actually need another week after that. And his response was not a believer. His response is, do you need more than that? I tell that story to everybody.
Yeah.
Because leadership setting the tone matters, and that is something that we can own, and to the extent that we can do it in our own domains, we ought to do it.
If we talk into people's lives, their personal lives as leaders, we create in cultures and we have engagement levels that are going to go significantly higher in the workplace. It just is. Somebody cares about me is one of the questions that Gallup asks. Somebody cares about me at work. I mean, that's why people stay. People are engaged by leaders. We could do another whole workshop on that, but yes, sir.
Thinking through, looking around the room, seeing where people are. We've got leaders, entrepreneurs, owners, and we talked a little bit about that. Okay, we can look at programming, we can look at behavioral health. Then you've got managers, folks who are not making leadership decisions. They're being dealt maybe a bad habit of cards from their employees and from their leaders. And then we have the employees down here that are, you know, not the victim, right? They're having to be successful in the circumstances, not despite the circumstances, right?
Right.
So talk me through that, like how, you know, because I feel two of those roles.
Yeah.
What about that manager level? How can they be successful right now that you're seeing? And then the employee, you know, if I think about those 12 questions. If I'm an employee, is it my job to now look around and say like, Do you have a friend? Or, you know, what is going through those 12 questions? What are you seeing successfully implemented in companies at those levels?
So what I'm seeing is, well, first of all, I think the senior level folks have to give the tools to the next tier manager. But when the next tier manager doesn't have those tools,
yeah,
you still have the ability to talk into people's lives, right? We've said it's not safe. We talk about HR rules. I'm the HR guy. You know, don't talk about these things. But the fact is, when you can look at someone that's working with you on a daily basis and say, something's not right, I want to help you figure it out, or I'm here, I'm listening, you know, all those things that we've been, you know, we could make, if you watch, you used to watch Kramer, you know, or whatever, all the things that he used to say actually were really relevant. I'm listening to you. Talking into people's lives right now is so important.
You're not talking about Kramer.
Frazier, sorry, not Kramer. Sorry, yeah. Kramer would not be a good counselor. Okay, but you can tell who does most of my counseling, right? But you understand what I'm saying, that you talking into people's lives and then escalating that, not their personal situation, but escalating, we have issues, so that you're managing up at that point. I want to make sure you understand we've got some people in crisis right now. And then when you are in crisis, down to the employee level, or even if you're working with a coworker, again, you have more latitude than anybody to speak into their life, because you're not held to the management rules or whatever, to speak in their life and say, there's help out there. I mean, I do this for a living, but if somebody's in that situation and they need to find out where the help is, they can call me and I'll find them the help. That's, you know, you guys can get my contact information. I'll help make sure they can get that. But it's our job. It's our job as Christians to speak into people's lives right now. We're being called on it. We're being called to do this more and more every day, because all they hear is the negative. And all they feel is negative, and carrying a burden of, I should be able to fix this. I'm going to speak as that's my testimony is, you know, the three words I had to learn was, I need help. Hard words for an old person.
So even among, I mean, just if I'm now I'm taking this to the next step, we've got managers bubbling it up. We've got employees being open and trying to encourage one another.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when the leaders aren't dealing with themselves? They're not taking care of their own. I mean, it's not like the statistics are at the employee level, or at the professional level, it's this. And the managers, they're doing better. And then the leaders, they're doing even better.
I was the head of my business unit.
Right.
When I had to tell them I need to take leave. Okay. They don't take care of themselves.
Yeah.
And we should be speaking to them boldly. And saying, there's ways, what can I do for you? I know there's something going on. What can I do to help you? A lot of times you're going to see significant resistance to that conversation.
Yeah.
But it's still our call. It's risky. You know, you risk something, right? Yeah. We risk something every day to be faith people, Jesus people. Rob, I think that's it. Any more questions? Awesome. Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I just like to add that I think the concept where Jesus said, let your light shine among others, was really important. Because in secular places or workplaces where you can't necessarily speak about the gospel or share the gospel, people look at you. And at least I can speak for my generation, there's a tendency to compare yourself with others.
Mm-hmm.
And when you can compare yourself with someone who is that light in their circumstance, that also makes you wonder, there's something different. And I want that difference. And that's also different.
Yeah. My son always says we smell different. You know, and I was like, we're Batses. I mean, I don't know if it's a family thing or what. And he's like, no, as Christians, we smell different. There's an aroma, right? When you're around us, you know that by the fruits of what we do. Right. And so that really is where we have this opportunity to speak into people's lives and be able to tell them there's hope and I'll help you find help. We got to be willing to engage as Christians. I really believe that's the big piece. Telling people there's hope and saying, see ya, doesn't really do anything for them. Engaging them and saying, I'll walk with you. I'll walk a mile. I might walk too. And help you get where you need to go. It's really the hard part. But really, it's where the fruits are. Anybody else?
I'll close with a statistic, if you don't mind. I'm a physician.
Please. Oh, thank goodness.
We've had a little hard time with the pandemic, too. It's kind of been kind of a challenge for us, nurses more than doctors. But 63% of people with major depressive disorder, with clinical depression, present to their doctor with a complaint of pain. Being depressed is painful, and pain is depressing. So it's mental health is health. It's very much a part of our health. Very, very important part of our health.
So you and I didn't arrange this beforehand, but that's the perfect way to close, because that's what it's so hard to get people to understand. It's physical, it's mental, and it is pain. It is real life pain. Can close with a quick prayer. Father God, thank you for this time. Thank you for everything you've given us, Lord. Thank you for this opportunity to serve others. Help us, Lord, as leaders, as employees, as just whatever role we're in, to be the light of the world, be your light, and to be different, as Brendan says, smell different to the world. Please be with us as we go from here into the rest of the day. Please bless our time together in Christ's name. Amen.